This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by MMComfortSystems.com. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Woke madness.
Oh, Seattle Parks and Recreation decided to promote and co-host an event at Discovery Park that is open to all except, of course, you guessed it, white people. Because inclusivity or something. Yet again, this is an example of a city that has decided to embrace a segregationist culture, all in the name of being inclusive. This is woke madness at its peak. It's an event that was labeled an interactive beach walk. It happened yesterday at Discovery Park. It coincides with Seattle Forest Week. It was one that was done in partnership with an organization called Sea Potential. Except it's C as in S-E-A. It's a play on words because this is a nonprofit that connects young people in this area, specifically of color, with maritime through, quote, healing activities and ocean justice conversations. Ocean justice. You know, Pacific does not get treated the same as the Atlantic, and I think that that is wrong. Something tells me there's some kind of ism involved. Is this waterism, oceanism? Does it have to do with the makeup of our sea creatures? Something is up. Let's talk it through. Let's talk it out. Let's heal. And don't get me started on the Indian Ocean. Should we change the name? Oh, it's a different name. Well, still, we should change the name. So this happened yesterday. Don't know how well it went. I was coming close to deciding to attend, and then I realized I don't hate myself that much. I'm at that degree where maybe I'll spend a couple hours just to go someplace for a photo, for a story I'm doing at KTTH.com. But yesterday, as I got up crazy early because of stupid time change. We'll complain about that a little bit later on in the show. And I was like, oh, it's today. I guess I could go. It'd be something if they kicked me out because I'm not someone who self-identifies as BIPOC. I don't know. And then I decided not to. But we can tell you this. The city of Seattle 100% prohibits discrimination in events, period. And yet this one was only, quote, open to anyone who identifies as BIPOC. This, of course, is not the first time Seattle Parks has done something like this. It was meant to connect the community with nature. Discovery Park, as it turns out, is one of the few in the city of Seattle that hasn't been completely overrun by the homeless. So it makes it a perfect venue for this kind of an event. Unfortunately, the invite makes it clear who they're not interested in seeing there. Quote, we invite you to explore what you can learn about yourself and community as we strengthen our sense of place and appreciate nature in a way that is culturally responsive to our experiences as Black, Indigenous, and people of color. This event is open to anyone who identifies as BIPOC. Now, according to the municipal code, this event is very clearly an example of discrimination in violation of its non-discrimination policy that, quote, assures every effort will be made to ensure non-discrimination in all of its programs, activities, whether those programs and activities are federally funded or not. Huh. Now, obviously, in this case, Seattle Parks did not ensure that this event would be non-discriminatory. They did that intentionally. It was intended to be discriminatory. It is an example, yet again, of this city's obsession with race. They did not respond for they responded 12 hours or maybe 24 hours after I asked, saying, do you still want a comment? To which I said, yes, I would. And they haven't responded since then. So we're maybe on hour 30-something.
I hear it takes a while to build a comment in response to racist events.
Well, to spin, you mean.
I mean,
you know, build a comment. You mean spin to get out of this being very clearly a racist event.
I don't spin, Jason. I build comments.
They spin. They build the spin. But I suspect this is what we're going to get. This is Jason Tells the Future at 3:09 on Monday, 11/8. Now, I'm probably going to get a response within this show, so you don't have to write this one down. But here's my guess as to what they're going to say. I suspect they will argue that it's not only for racial minorities. It's not actually technically excluding white people. After all, I read it directly from the event description. It does not explicitly say, hey, whitey, you're not allowed. White people, no, we're just saying no. But let's be clear. They can make that argument all they want. It's a disingenuous one. By saying the event is open to anyone who identifies as BIPOC, the inference there is that if you do not identify as a person of color, you might not be able to attend. The intent is exclusionary. They're doing this under the guise that this interactive beach walk, which I don't even know what that means. Do you mean you're walking is interactive? Does that mean someone's talking to you at the whole? Okay, so a tour? You're going to ask some deep dive questions about identity and what nature means to the BIPOC community. They want it to be, quote unquote, culturally responsive. Don't know what that means. It seems to indicate that someone who's black or Latino will respond differently to conversations and appreciation about nature. Really? Is that what you mean? You have these race radicals out there who pretend that these spaces, in particular nature, is somehow centered around white people. In fact, I did some research over the weekend and I saw that the Sierra Club's Lornette Vestal called the outdoors unbearably white. You have activists like Glenn Nelson who argued that the outdoors remains a largely white domain. He says it's, quote, up to white America to invite communities of color in to enlist us as allies. So the argument is too many white people enjoy nature, and thus that makes it somehow inhospitable, specifically to black, Latino, I would say Asians, but they're obviously they're not counting Asians. They never
yeah, we were excluded in this, okay,
you're,
Jason?
You're deemed white just like Jews are. And Native American, okay. Now, obviously, this isn't the first time they've done this, something like this. We remember back in June of this year, you had organizers from Taking Black Pride. It was at Jimi Hendrix Park in Seattle, and they said that they were going to charge a quote-unquote reparations fee for the white people in order to attend, which was illegal conduct because it was a Seattle-owned park. Seattle Parks wouldn't get involved. They simply tried to skirt the issue. Well, you know, we're not issuing any permits for this particular park because there was some construction going on at the same time. So I said, okay, but according to the charter, you can do an investigation even if there wasn't the use of a permit. Oh, yeah, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do it. And of course, I guess par for the course, Seattle Times did a little bit of a puff piece, not just on this, but the Greater Seattle Forest Week and how it's embracing inclusivity. And so they embraced the embrace of inclusivity in the form of race exclusionary events. They did this puff piece. They didn't call out the racial discrimination. They didn't even question why a race-based event for nature was necessary. Instead, they just call it, quote, inclusion-minded. Inclusion-minded, they say, of an event that says it's for BIPOC only. Uh-huh. They even acknowledge there's a plant ecologist with Green Seattle Partnership. That's the nonprofit sort of umbrella behind all of this stuff. Her name is Lisa Sieko. And she told the Seattle Times that many of the events are, quote, meant to prioritize BIPOC participation. Okay. Thank you, Seattle Times, in your press release, puff piece. Sorry, it read like a press release, but that's my bad. So let's be clear. The outdoors is not a white space, no matter what these race hustlers will tell you. Absolutely everyone can appreciate nature. Not me, but everyone else can appreciate nature, regardless of their race. Seeing more white people out in a Seattle park or on some sort of hike is not a reflection of racism. It is a reflection of population demographics. It is not the result of some sort of nefarious effort to keep any non-white person from being able to go out on a hike and enjoying an afternoon in the outdoors. And what drives me nuts about this, progressives now reject what was once a shared goal, bringing people together regardless of race. That instead of judging someone on the basis of their skin color, you try to bring them in. And now they're doing the opposite. They want to make everything and everyone centered around race and identity. They want to judge you as an oppressor or oppressed based only on your skin color. They've adopted a position to effectively see everything through the lens or the prism of race. This is critical race theory in action. And this is a worldview that is hurting society. It's not making it better. It's not making it better. If you are offended that too many white people are enjoying nature, then guess what? You are the racist. Nature is not racist. Mother Nature is not racist. Should we call her mother? Is that too gendered? Is that wrong now? Z nature?
Z is probably right? appropriate, at least in Seattle.
Or they nature? Mother or father, who's judging nature? We should do that.
Okay, I like that.
1-800-465-8770. If you text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, I'll send you a link directly to this story so you can read it and post it on your social media accounts. If you missed me on the Faulkner Focus earlier this morning, you can check it out at our YouTube page, youtube.com/JasonRANTZ. youtube.com/JasonRANTZ. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
It's not often that we get so many controversies surrounding coaches at universities here in Washington State. And yet, in the last, month, we have three. The biggest one, of course, ultimately was decided, at least initially. We'll see how the court case goes on October 18th when Wazoo decided to ditch Nick Rolovich because he did not want to get the vaccine. And now, within the span of, 24 hours, we learn of two new curious controversies. I'm not sure either of them are actual controversies. I don't think any of them are that big of a deal, unless I'm missing something huge in both of these stories. So we start first at Seattle University. Red Hawks. Red Hawks.
There you go.
Go Red Hawks.
In, one of the four sports that they have.
Yeah. They have soccer. Coach Fewing, of course, is a legend, so we know that and we follow that.
They have crew.
Dance?
I don't know if they have dance. Softball, baseball, they got those.
Well, softball's not a sport, so let's stop with that nonsense. They've got basketball. Jim Hayford is a basketball coach there, the head coach, and he's currently on administrative leave. The school apparently is investigating the allegations that he used the N-word during a scrimmage on Thursday of last week. And this all according to Stadium Basketball Insider Jeff Goodman. And I want you to think, if you think your life isn't quite going the way that you had hoped, that your career is maybe stuck and you're wondering what could possibly go more wrong for your trajectory, note that you are not stuck covering Seattle University basketball to the point where you're considered an insider.
Ouch. I didn't realize that guy was going to be the one who got hurt in this segment.
Neither did I until I started to see what he does. Now, the athletic department said, yes, he's on administrative leave, but we can't actually tell you what it's about because it's a personnel matter. Thus, we're not able to comment. However, Goodman, because he's an insider, has all the sources. And he says that a black player used the N-word during a scrimmage last week and a ref called it out. Presumably heard the N-word, said, don't you do that. And then, according to the report, Hayford goes up to the player and says, did you say the N-word? Except instead of saying N-word, he used the word. He is white. The player is black. And he apologized to the team, realizing that he broke the one rule that should be in place for everybody, which is just don't say the N-word, period, in any circumstance. But I'm reading To Kill a Mockingbird. No, just skip it. I'm not saying that it's right that you would have to skip it in a piece of literature whose the very point of its existence is to point out the racism. I'm simply saying it's not worth the hassle. He apologized, but then players were all like, yeah, well, we don't want to play for you. And I'm thinking about this, and I can't help but wonder, so wait a minute. You saying the N-word in an inappropriate way, in a clearly inappropriate way, is okay as a player. The coach calling it out, mistake to actually use the word and not just say N-word. But the coach calling it out, that's just too much. We just can't play for him. Can you play next to the kid who used the N-word? Why not treat them both equally? Because one's black and one's white. Were they being used in the same way? No. One was used in a way worse way. It was used to call someone else out, presumably. It was meant to insult someone. That was what the player did. The coach did not mean, presumably, did not mean to call out you as a bad, as the N-word. He was merely repeating to understand what it is you said. Should he have said it? No, because that's the rule. That is the rule. Don't say it ever. But it's just curious, the disparate reactions and treatment in this case.
I mean, that seems like the response, though, anytime that this happens is when the white guy says it, you know, obviously they get...
You must want people to say the N-word. Well, no. I'm just showing there's a disparate reaction.
I think it also matters, how naturally did it come out when Jim Hayford said it? Did it sound like he had said it multiple times before? Because that's going... Did he stutter on it and was it kind of scared to say it?
Who do you think said it more in their lifetime? Him or the player?
I mean, yeah, probably the player who was caught saying it on the court. Yeah.
But who said it to insult the other person.
But
that has nothing... That's okay. Thumbs up. We're cool. It should be called... They both should be called out as wrong.
Sure.
Call them both out or call neither out. But you can't pick and choose.
But it's worse when Hayford does it.
I don't know. In this case, was it worse in this case in the context?
Yeah, I think so.
Why? Because he's white.
Yes.
Oh my God. Meanwhile, at the UW, they just suspended for a game their coach, Jimmy Lake. And again, something tells me that this is not necessarily about what happened on the field, but maybe with some stuff going on behind the scenes, like them sucking and losing to the Ducks.
I mean, that's fair.
Just throwing that out there.
This is probably like a test run to see what else they got on the coaching staff. Suspend for one game so we can see what next guy up's got.
This is what the AP says. They say, Jimmy Lake appeared to thrust his right arm forward, or toward, what's his name? Ruprake Fuvav?
Yeah, I don't know
who the player is. During a brief skirmish on the Washington sideline. The player appeared to be exchanging words with Oregon's Jalon Rett. That name I could say.
Good job, Jason.
I don't like that.
You should be a sports broadcaster with that sort of
Jalon or Jalen. Give me Jalen. Asked about it after the game, he said he did not hit the player and was just trying to get him away from Red before it could become a penalty.
And one of our players, Rocke, was close, Oregon's defender's face. And I went in to separate them and push him back. And then after that, we settled down a little bit. And that was our deal all week long, was we got to have poise.
Okay. So in other words, he was trying to help the situation, de-escalate the situation.
They were talking trash back and forth. I didn't hear what they were saying. But our staff and their staff did a good job of separating the guys before anything seriously escalated.
Coach Lake, did you punch him? Did you hit him?
I separated him. I didn't strike him. I separated him.
Have you seen video of this?
Yeah, he pops him straight in the face mask.
Was it a punch? Hey, dum-dum, get over there. Stop this nonsense. You're going to get a penalty.
Yeah,
there is a difference between punching someone versus hitting them on the head with a helmet. Was the helmet on?
Yeah, and when you get popped in the helmet, it doesn't feel good.
Okay, how about this? When athletes are out there and they get a pat on the backside.
Sure.
Is that sexual assault?
No, because it's in most likely in agreement with whatever the player just did. Player scores a touchdown.
So if it wasn't,
if it was a bad play,
but we're just going to go, okay, we're going to, and you do the whole, like, I'm going to lean in and clap my hands a couple times and chew on gum and then maybe hock a loogie or something. Like, okay, you get this next time, son. Pat on the butt.
Did you watch the video of Jimmy Lake hitting the guy in the face?
Yeah, that wasn't an assault.
It's not an assault, no, but you can't hit a player in 2021.
Okay, shut
up. That kid's like 18.
So? He's no longer a kid. He's an adult. He can fend for himself. We're seriously pretending.
It's 2021. You cannot hit student athletes in any sort of way.
If you had to give a pass to one of these two coaches, and you have to, that's the game, who do you give a pass to? Who do you give a pass to?
Why do I have to be the decision maker?
Because I'm putting you on the spot.
Hayford.
Oh, because you're a racist.
Okay, what, Lake.
You
said,
oh, so now you support assaulting children?
Yeah, that's kind of how I figured this conversation was going
to
go.
That's why you had to answer it. 1-800-465-877 if you want to join the conversation. Send me a text. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. I hope everyone had a wonderful weekend in which they did not forget to change their clocks for daylight savings or spring
forward. Our
phones
do it by ourselves. Nobody had to even move a muscle to do it.
Here's the problem that you are overlooking, young 25-year-old producer.
I think I'm 26.
26, same thing. I think. Just go with it. I don't
know. Okay, 25.
The problem is there are still people who get into their car and they forget to change the time. And then they look up and they say, oh, my God, I'm an hour late. I thought I had time. People do this all the time. Same thing with the number on your microwave, the clock on your stove. You look at it. You don't realize it until you realize it. And then you leave it there because you don't know how to change it. Because it's sometimes difficult to actually change the time there. And then some lazy people will just say, no, you know what? It'll be perfect for the next time we do this.
In 6 months?
Yeah, it'll be fine. And it causes a whole bunch of problems. I'm not in the business of complaining about this issue because ultimately, you know, I can't change it. It is what it is. I will, however, suggest perhaps we can do it on a Friday overnight instead of a Saturday overnight. So you at least have 2 days to discover the error. So that you don't feel like on Monday you're late to the office or a doctor's appointment or whatever it is.
If we were actually proud of daylight savings and changing the clock, we would do it in the middle of the day when everyone would get to see it and it would be a big celebration. But because it happens in the middle of the night, I think we're ashamed of it.
Why doesn't it happen at midnight? That's the other, like, why?
That would make a lot of sense.
Why not? Like, that one I get, you can treat it like New Year's, especially when we get an hour. I mean, obviously, when we lose an hour, it's the worst New Year's ever. But you've all had bad New Year's. We celebrate. We got another hour of life, even though it's not really how it works. You're still going to die the same time you otherwise would have. You don't get an actual, literal extra hour. And you're just tired the next day, which is the one you're supposed to be tired at. Because they both make me tired. They both make me tired. Everyone's like, oh, well, one of them is bad because people, you know, are in their car earlier when it's dark out and they're tired. I'm like, no, I'm always tired. Both of them make me tired. The one that gives us an extra hour, I've not changed any of my habits. I don't go to bed earlier or get up earlier or stay up later or get up later, regardless of which one we're talking about. I go to bed exactly the same time. Still.
You're on Jason Rant Standard Time?
It's my time. It's Rant Standard Time. And then I'm tired the next day, regardless. So it's all a scam. It's all a scam. I was looking over stories over the weekend, and there was one that popped right in front of me, and I kind of forgot about it. Not going to lie. Totally forgot about it. I sent myself a note, an email, to which I forgot to check, that had this story, and I was super excited and really pumped to talk about it. It turns out I talked about it earlier today on the Faulkner Focus, and that reminded me. But as I was clicking on this story, I saw a tweet that had popped up about something that Joe Scarborough had said today. And they fit in perfectly, even though one is about crime and one is about COVID. One is about masks. The other one is about burglaries. And on the surface, you would say, okay, those are very clearly not connected whatsoever. And yet my crazy mind connected them because I saw a theme. We are seeing a movement to normalize things that should not be normalized. Things that we know go against our very nature. Things that we know in our hearts are wrong. And yet there are people who are pretending otherwise and trying to normalize this kind of behavior. I want to start with Joe Scarborough. Because he endorsed the idea of permanently wearing masks.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, I've said it before, I hate wearing masks. I just hate them. At the same time, it's been really nice not having the flu for a couple of years. Now, when I'm outside, I'm not going to wear a mask unless I'm just like people are completely crowded around. But on airplanes, that's one of the few places where, I mean, how many times, we've flown so many years. And you hear somebody coughing and sneezing, you sit going, oh, my God, I'm going to have a flu for the next two weeks. And sure enough, half the time you did. So that is a great thing. It is one place where, man, if I can go another year and a half, 2 years without the flu, I'll put that mask on in a plane, whether I like it or not.
then do that. If that's what you want to do, then do that. You could have done it before the pandemic. You're certainly doing it now. You can do it in the future, regardless of what the mask rules are. I don't like this because it is putting out there into the world the little bug in the ear. Hey, you know, there's some benefits to constantly wearing this mask, when I would argue the risks far outweigh the benefits. And that has nothing to do with COVID. Pushing COVID completely aside, there's something to be said about seeing people's faces. When you have conversations with them, indoors or out, and you've got a mask on that other person, you are not picking up on social cues. Social cues are incredibly important in all of our relationships. All of them. The intimate ones through the casual ones with coworkers. And in some cases, that intersects. It is incredibly important to see the other person, understand what they're thinking, how they're thinking, why they're thinking it. And you can sometimes only pick that up by looking at their mouth, the nose that maybe twitches just briefly. And you pick up on one of those micro movements. And it's especially important for kids. That's how they develop into social beings, where they don't become socially awkward. They see each other, not just hear. That's incredibly important. But we are normalizing wearing the masks by focusing on a perceived positive. And there's no doubt about it that flu has gone away for the last 2 years. Now, it's obviously not completely gone away. And my assumption is that there were a number of cases of people who had the flu when people claimed that they had COVID. So the flu is out there. But there's certainly less cases of the flu. And just talking about it anecdotally, most of you, did you get the flu in the last 2 years? Because I didn't.
No.
I get the flu?
Yeah, no. I haven't got it.
Now, do I get the flu every year? No, I usually get it once every other year, maybe once every 2 years, but I do get the flu. Is it possible that I just happen right now to be in that sort of place of, okay, this is Jason's turn not to get it? I guess, but certainly a lot of people who are listening right now and the people that you know have not actually had the flu. But focusing just on that and pretending it's all worth it is just lazy. It's also ultimately dangerous. When you think about the actual impacts on all of us, wearing a mask 24/7 has. There's some people who, even while outside, there was a guy who was talking, and he was talking to, I'm presuming, a friend or a colleague or some kind. They both were walking their dogs on the sidewalk, and they just sort of stopped and talked, and the guy had his mask down. I walked past him. As soon as I walked past him, he put his mask up briefly, continued to talk. It was almost like I wasn't there, and I wouldn't have known he even knew I was there had he not lifted his mask. Second I left, I turned and he pulled it down. That is a weird place to be, and it's not healthy to have that kind of fear around people. Unless this guy had some severe underlying health condition that I just didn't realize, there's no reason to do that, period. And I don't want that to become a normal part of our behavior every day. At the same time, let's talk about burglaries. How are they connected to wearing a mask? Really simple. San Francisco Chronicle had a story out over the weekend that was accompanied by a tweet that was really, truly, horrifically dumb. It's getting called out, rightly so. They asked if residents in San Francisco should tolerate burglaries, that this is part of big city living, which is a weird pitch to me. Hey, guys, ditch the countryside, where things are low-key, there's a sense of calm, you get to live a victim-free experience. Come on over and move to the big city where you're going to get robbed, along with local drugstores getting ransacked every single day to the point where they have to close down. It's a weird pitch. Now, this particular story looked into the rise of crime in San Francisco. They saw a rise in the course of the last 18 months in shootings, assaults, shoplifting, car break-ins. Which, by the way, as you'll recall, we were originally told it's because of COVID. Stupid people believe that. Smart people look at this and say, oh, no, 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 no. Smart people look at this and say, well, what has changed outside of COVID? Because COVID didn't get me to go ahead and engage in a carjacking. What happened outside of COVID? Oh, Democrats finally pursued some of the policies that they claimed that they were going to pursue. They defunded the police on top of just naturally going after police as a part of their platform, pretending, by the way, they didn't do it. And then, bam, as of October 31st, San Francisco had 810 reports of burglaries or attempted burglaries in just one specific jurisdiction, which represented a 13% increase this time last year. When you look at the Central District in San Francisco, they had a 753% increase in car break-ins from May of 2020 to May of this year. 753% increase. And so the Chronicle posts this tweet. Residents and city leaders are searching for answers. Should they tolerate burglaries as a part of city living and focus on barricading homes? Should repeat offenders get rehab or be incarcerated so they can't commit more crimes? People ripped on this. Their piece was trying to make an argument that leaders there were in a quandary because they're trying to pursue some form of criminal justice reform while, quote, debating how to manage rates of property crime that for years have been among the highest in the nation. And you had some people who called out this tweet. Some others actually said, well, yeah, you know, we should probably accept this element of city living. Let's be very clear. Democrat policies are to blame for this. They keep prolific offenders out of jail. They give them endless chances. And if they don't stop their behavior, they still say, well, maybe we should just give more money to some social justice program that actually isn't going to solve the problem, but will pretend that they're going after the root problems. And instead of placing the blame on the policies, what do we get from the San Francisco Chronicle and, frankly, other activists out there? They're all the same, the media activists and the street activists. They pretend this is normal part of city living. This is what it's like to live. You get traffic, you get some noise, and you get a whole bunch of crime. But dare I tell you to ask anyone you've known who's lived in San Francisco or Seattle or Portland or Minneapolis or Los Angeles or New York City. Ask them if they've lived there for more than a decade. Have things changed? Ask them if things have changed over the last 5 years. Because here in Seattle, things have dramatically changed for the worse in the last 5 years. And I've been here way longer than that. Things are worse off now, and no, it is not a part of city living. And if it was a part of city living to the degree that it is right now, people would not live in the city anymore. They would leave in a heartbeat. They'd go over to Mukilteo. They'd hang out in Sumner. They'll go over to Ording. We don't give Ording any love. They got love just now. And the folks in Yelmer are like, what about us? And I say, I mention you guys all the time. Why don't you sit this one out?
Yeah, I'll check Ording off the list. We don't need to touch base with them now for another 8 months.
And Mukilteo do that.
Well, I feel like we've done a lot of Mukilteo lately.
Just lately. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. Parents got woke, but not in the way that the left, that progressives wanted them to get woke. You see, these parents heard some rather insane things that their kids' teachers were saying as their kid was on their laptop in a remote learning session in the living room or in the kitchen. On the dining room table, the parent who's trying to do work in their office, they've been put outside of their space because of COVID. And they kind of in the background hear, wait, what did that? The teacher couldn't have said that. Only to hear it again. A teacher saying, well, it's on you to defeat white supremacy. And you know who's a white supremacist? All those Republicans. They got woke to the reality. And now they're paying a lot more attention to what's being taught in the classroom. You know that you are paying just a little bit more attention, aren't you? Those of you who are parents. And what you're finding is not something that you like. There's a story out today. It's out of Rockland, California. It's right by Sacramento in the middle of the state. And they've got a school there, Whitney High School, that has a social studies teacher that apparently likes to make jokes. Weird how the jokes always seem to go against conservatives. And in this case, it happened on a quiz. Now, it's called a question. It's not really a question that was posed. He makes a statement. And then you have A, B, C, or D to answer correctly. It's multiple choice. The statement was a group of complete idiots. So who was he talking about? What is he talking about? A is the KKK. B is all of Florida, thinking Florida is a group. Okay. C is Fox News. Again, that's not a group of people. It's a network, dummy. And then D is Texans, which is a group of people. I don't know why he didn't do Floridians. I don't know why he didn't do Fox News reporters or whatever. It's very, he's not a very smart person, which is why he's stuck teaching social studies for the rest of his life in Rockville, California. This is obviously inappropriate. This is obviously crossing a line, and parents are pretty ticked off.
Some type of discipline needs to be placed on this teacher.
Parents are outraged, and they're right to be. This is an anonymous parent, anonymous, out of fear that complaining will end up getting his kid treated unfairly by teachers. And he called out the one-sided political commentary and says, yeah, this has been an ongoing concern.
The question on the test is like really blatant, obviously, and that's out there. That I think it's the first time that it's been really looked at of crossing the line.
Jessa Krisovich, unlike the anonymous parent, was all like, I'm putting my name to this. She's the one who actually posted a screenshot of this quiz question on, I think it was Facebook. And bam, it started to go viral. And she spoke to KTXL television. And she says, look, stories like this happen all the time. But unfortunately, they don't really get a whole bunch of attention.
The story's kind of gone in one ear and out the other because they just sounded so unbelievable.
One student said that this teacher is known to, quote, always make jokes. Okay, let's go with that for a moment. Let me be generous in how I'm viewing this for the first time in my life.
You have been glass half full rants, though, yeah, for some time now.
Let me be generous.
Okay, let's see it.
It's still an awful joke. You are still adding KKK to the list, which then conflates KKK members with Fox News people, with Texans, and with all of Florida. That's not really funny, right? So you remove the KKK part. Now, let's still go with this as being a clear joke. No ill intent. Did you have another joke for liberals? Same question, but only have liberal, like Antifa, MSNBC, all of California, like things like that. Did you do any of that? No, you didn't. So why is that? Why is it that all of your jokes happen to be against conservatives and put them in a bad light? Why is that? You can frame this around you joking all you want. You can go ahead and do that. Good luck. Everyone kind of knows it. But these jokes betray your true feelings about your subjects. And as Jessa points out, this is not a way that makes this environment welcoming to students.
We all have different beliefs. This is, you know, the United States. We all come from different backgrounds, and everybody should be okay with who they are.
It should be. But there's some people who don't want you to be okay with who you are, which is why they employ these kinds of strategies to shame you, to get you to change course, to call you out. It is wrong. It is absolutely wrong. And something needs to change. This isn't about this one high school in a city in California you've never heard of. These things are happening all the time. They're happening at schools like Eastlake, a story that I'm taking a deeper and deeper dive into that we'll probably hopefully have after Thanksgiving. That's how much
time
I'm
putting. We have to wait until after Thanksgiving for that?
I'm putting a lot of work into this one.
You're doing a tease right now for a story that's not going to be ready for 3 weeks.
It's called The Long Tease. It's the Jason Rand Show, also referred to as a long tease.